Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Branton.
Well, I never.
No Matt Knight this evening. And also, I don't know if you can hear, but once again, I have got a cold and I'm struggling to talk.
Oh, God.
I literally don't understand
what is
going on.
You're always poorly.
I'm not at all. It gets to Tuesday or whenever we're recording, and suddenly it's like, oh yeah, you've lost your voice. Brilliant.
He's had 2 days off, and then he's back in the office for one day, and it's too much for him. Earlier on today, he was like, oh, I think it's because we're sitting in this building with air conditioning, and I'm like, we sit next to each other every day, and we travel home together, we travel to work together, we also spend most evenings together, and quite a lot of the weekends. I'm never ill.
No, exactly. You'd think all that making out would cause at least something.
I know.
It is a true bromance. We literally spend probably about 10 hours a day together. If I sound a little bit ropey, there's unfortunately no Matt to fall back on.
So
just these two clowns to get us through, which is great. Because in a week where there's absolutely no news,
we're relying wholly on charisma, of which we have none without Matt Knight.
Indeed.
I'm not here next week, though.
Oh, thank goodness.
That's so good.
There's always
on the day that we are doing the podcast next week, I will be at the Fender Factory.
Oh, wow. There we go.
In Lath.
Can you take some sort of audio recorder with you?
Oh, I could do. I was going to do like pictures and maybe a little bit of video.
Can you Periscope it?
I could definitely Periscope it. I need to get on the Periscope.
That's going to cost you a fortune.
Yeah, unless they've got Wi-Fi.
Yeah, unless
they've
got Wi-Fi.
Will. Come on, they'll let me on Wi-Fi. It's me. They're probably planning for me arriving already.
I mean,
the red carpet.
Have they sorted your signature? they would do, but you can't keep... you can't make your mind up on anything for 2 minutes. So
no, I'm a Gibson man at the moment.
Right, okay, yeah. Of course you are, yeah.
Do you own any Gibson basses?
No, but I'm looking for a Thunderbird.
What? Oh, you're mental.
Well, anyway, I'm not liking my P bass at the moment, actually.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I need more articulation.
You need basically what you're saying is you need an American P bass rather than that Mexican one that you've got.
No, because I've got like two jazz basses and I just think they're...
What do you mean by articulation?
I just need a little bit more treble clarity without that treble being bite.
I've got some plectrums at home.
Yeah, as we've discussed before, you can solve nearly all of the problems that you talk about with your bass by playing with a plectrum.
Too mid-heavy. And I play with a lot of mids, but P bass is just at the moment. I think maybe it's the quarter pounders.
As we've discussed many times on this podcast, you've got the wrong pickup in your bass.
It's true. I have bought a set of SPB1s.
Okay.
The Seymour Duncan vintage reissue.
It's the best one they do?
Yes, I think so too. So I am...
Why didn't you put that in it to begin with then?
Because I thought I wanted really high output.
Right, okay.
But now, like, basically it's impossible to clean up.
Right.
Like, impossible to clean up. And then always really mid-heavy and just not enough... Yeah, just not enough articulation. Like, not enough clarity on my notes. It always just seems overly compressed, but in a bad way.
Okay.
So I was thinking, because I've got two jazz basses, I
could sell one of those,
drop one of those into D standard and use one of those instead of the P bass. But then I was like, oh, but I like my jazz basses being in E standard.
So you need to buy another bass, basically.
So maybe a Thunderbird.
It's such a stupid plan.
Do you think a Thunderbird, because it's got to pick up on the bridge, but do you think it's still going to be too muddy?
They're super muddy.
They sound like a Thunderbird, basically, and you'll never get away from the fact they sound like that.
That isn't what you need for your band. That isn't what you need at all.
But they look really nice.
Yeah, but...
Have you thought about active circuitry?
I have, yes, because that was the Marcus Miller. I was thinking about that. But then I was like, oh, I think I just want to spend some money.
This is what it all comes down to.
As in, I want to spend a lot. I don't want to buy another sort of cheap thing. And the Marcus Millers are brilliant, and I probably will buy one, but...
Get a custom shop P-Bass.
I would get a custom shop jazz bass if I was going to get a custom
That would last, I think, maybe about a year.
That's not true. You are the one who dislikes jazz basses and sells them on. I'm really into them. I was... Also, the other option is, you know what's still in the actively being made Gibson catalogue?
Gold top.
No, gold top Les Paul bass.
No, that will be even worse.
Why?
It's so muddy.
No.
What are you talking about? No.
It's got to pick up right on the bridge.
Have you ever played a Les Paul bass?
Yeah, I can't. It was ages ago, though. But
Let me tell you what they sound like. They sound muddy.
Yeah.
They do sound muddy. Why don't you get one of the EBs?
They don't make them.
I thought there was still some stock floating around.
Oh, probably.
I mean, the last time I looked, I think you could only get the 5-string ones.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's
maybe
perfect.
You want a 5-string.
Yeah.
No, I don't want a 5-string.
Then you won't have to do this drop tuning nonsense. No.
Have you got... Could you have had... You had a 5-string until recently, didn't you?
I had a Warwick Corvette 5-string, which I sold, which...
Did that belong to you?
Sorry?
Did that belong to you?
No, it's kind of a long-term loan.
And you've sold it?
For the friend, yes. I sold it, but the guy I sold it to still owes me £200, if you're listening.
Oh, right, okay, fine.
Yeah, he's probably not listening.
He's probably
not. He's an idiot. Okay. He owes me £200.
Okay, good. And so, consequently, you owe your friend 500 and something pounds?
No, I sold it for £700.
Okay.
And he's paid me 500 of it, so 200 to go.
Sweet.
So good. I need to get that out then.
So you're still indebted to the person whose base it actually is.
It's really annoying. Yeah.
I bet.
Don't trust people.
Well, I have to do this podcast. I have to trust that you'll turn up and actually read the running order, which you never do. So
I mean, you did text us like 20 minutes ago saying, sorry, I haven't sent you the running order yet.
This is the first week where it's been late. It's usually in the morning. By lunchtime, I get it to you so we can prepare all of the goodness that we normally deliver.
I was a little bit disappointed when on lunchtime I checked and it wasn't.
I know. Tell me about it.
Normally that's when I do my research.
Busy day. I've been at Amazon headquarters today. You know, we can't all... You know.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah, it was quite good.
Selling to the man.
No, it's good. It's good. It's nice. Oh, they got a lovely, lovely office. A lot of hot desking going on.
No, I don't like you.
There was a really nice coffee shop next door.
Was there?
Yeah. It was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't as good as the small batch that we had before we left, but it was very good.
Yeah. Jay Cross.
Hello.
What have you been up to this week?
What have I been up to this week? I had another band practice with this band that I've started.
Is this the band where you play bass?
It is, yes. And I ended up using, in the practice room, I ended up using an SVT-2, which I didn't like at all.
They're not very good. I don't like those at all.
The big old ones. Was it Brighton Electric?
Yes.
Yeah, I know the one. It's the upstairs one with the blue and red SVT-2 logo on it, which is the old, like, mid-90s
yes,
one.
Yeah.
That one in particular, I think, isn't especially
cracking. I didn't like it at all. But I had to turn off the harmonic percolator because there was, like, a bit too much going on.
This has always been my problem with Ampeg, is actually that...
There's sort of a bit too much going on.
Impossible to clean up. It's actually a good defence for Mark bass.
Yeah. Which is absolutely... And that's good normally. Like, I like a lot of drive, and I like the bass to be really drivey, but I like that drive to come from either the harmonic percolator or sand amp or the Boss BB1X.
It's easier to add than it is to take away.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if your sort of blank palette is already one thing.
I also couldn't do much with the EQ. Like I really tried.
So it's got a 7-band.
Which I turned off, obviously.
Right, it also has a conventional.
Yeah.
And it has a mid-selector as well.
It does, which the knob was broken off, so right. I couldn't use that.
Most people, I think, just put it in the middle anyway.
I sort of just, yeah. I mean, I messed around a little bit with it. It didn't sound very good. And the cab it was into was like a 2x10, but like...
What?
I think it was a 2x10, or maybe it was a 2x15. 15? I don't know. It was, the speakers were side by side in a really tall cabinet. It was very weird.
That what?
What?
That yeah. sounds like nothing I'm aware of.
It was really weird.
Ampeg. Who was the cab by?
Yeah, I'm sure it was an Ampeg.
I've literally no
maybe
idea
one of their
about.
Maybe one of their Neo series Ampegs.
No, they haven't got anything that new in that rehearsal room. I tell you what, I used to do because I used to have a B1, which is a
oh yeah, they were really bad.
Oh no, not a B1.
You mean a B250?
B something or other. It was a combo,
right?
I think it was a B1 that was a 15-inch driver and had it, all solid state, but it had like
the scrambler. On it.
It did not have a scrambler. No, this is ages ago. It had like it had a graphic EQ that you could turn on and off, but it had like the EQ shelving, so you could just put in, I think it was called like ultra bass and ultra high. Yeah. And I'd just basically leave the EQ pretty much flat and just put the ultra bass and ultra high and it sounded really good.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, they were a cool little combo.
I always liked those toggles on the old like SVT. The SVT 1 and like the SVT vintage reissues,
yeah,
where you get your standard 3-band EQ and then they add those little 3-way toggle switches where yeah. you can have, you know, you can have the ultra high and ultra bass on or in the middle or yeah. off. They're great. Yeah, loads of tone shaping just from those. They are cool.
I'm rehearsing at Brighton Electric this weekend and yep. I've requested an Ampeg, but I think I might take the Mark bass down with me.
Really?
Give it a good old
run. You'll get probably an SVT 450 if listeners aren't familiar with those. They were solid state Ampeg heads that they put in the SVT Classic chassis, so a massive like all valve chassis, so huge, really heavy because it's all thick like marine ply
With nothing in it,
with
basically.
Nothing in it, which was, so it was basically like the ultimate poser's head if yeah. you didn't have any money.
I really like the SVT 450.
They're so trebly. Do you know when I play them, I have
that's
to
great
turn,
for me.
But just to get them to sound flat through a normal, even a Mark bass, like to make them sound like just flat like a Mark bass or an Orange, I have to have the bass up on 3/4 of the way and I have to have the treble down 3/4 of the way.
I usually go pretty much all the way up on the treble and pretty much all the way up on the bass and leave the mid where it is.
That must sound awful.
No, it's great. That's a classic punk rock bass tone. Definitely a little bit of a mid scoop on there. Love
mid-scoop.
It.
Mid scoop. There's nothing. Punk rock's all about your mids.
It depends. Right. It depends. You got to play it carefully. Anything else?
No.
Have you spent any time with your Roland synth collection?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
How's that going?
It's going cool. I still have no idea what I'm doing. You know, do we have this discussion where I feel
yeah.
like
yeah, the dog.
The dog meme yeah. with the chemistry set. That's exactly how I feel. But they're very fun.
Okay.
They're very fun. And I'm sure at some point, once I sit down and watch some videos, I will...
You'll actually understand what
I'll
you're
actually
doing.
Understand what I'm doing, yeah. But they are very, very cool. And I'm really enjoying it. And I'm really glad that I bought them because it was a lot of money to lay out on something that I wasn't really sure about, but I'm really glad that I've done it because they're very, very cool. They're very cool. So,
Joe Bratton, apart from lusting after a Thunderbird,
yeah,
what have you been up to this week?
Well, I got a couple of things. I've got a couple of new things.
As in you purchased a couple of new things.
Yes, yeah. Okay. One's a purchase. One was a gift.
Oh wow, very nice.
Well, you know about the gift, but
do I?
Yeah, we discussed it, but you've obviously forgotten.
Oh, I've completely forgotten. Okay, I don't really listen to when you're talking.
No, I know. It's why often you hang up on me mid conversation.
Yes.
A one-way conversation. Yeah, I purchased one of the Moore, I don't know what they're called, actually. Shimverb. But the two, the double.
Oh, I don't know what that one's called.
Oh, yeah.
I should check, really. I wanted something that did that whole sort of... because you've got loads of reverb options, and then it's got a separate foot switch just for the shim, and then
is that
you
what
can,
it does?
And you on that you can select whether it octaves up the shim,
okay,
right up to something like 12 octaves. Or it's not that, but you know it's something stupid.
Shimverb Pro.
All right. So yeah, which I thought would just be really cool. Basically, because I use a one of the Hof. The Hall of Fame minis, yep. the little one, and they are great. But because you only have the reverb level control, which is really good. Like, they've really thought about the fact, like, if you're only going to have one control on this
pedal, the one that you want.
Yeah.
Well, no, just to make the sort of the other uncontrollable things actually sort of reactive with the boosting of that.
Yes.
It's very well put together, and it is really good. But just, I do find reverb massively depends on the room that you're in.
Yeah.
And actually only having that one control, especially on a bass, I find sometimes it's just...
I mean, reverb on a bass is ridiculous anyway.
No, but it's cool for some bits. It's cool if you're in an interesting band, Mark. But it's...
that was good, I like
it. Cold. Cheers, you won't find either of my guitarists using reverb either, or any effects. No, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. But yeah, it's... I just wanted to be able to control it a bit more, and that was affordable, interesting, and I liked the idea of shim as a separate control.
How much are they out to a customer?
They're not very much money. I think they're 110
quid,
something like that. Yeah, I think it's just over 100 quid.
Yeah.
They are very cool. My problem with this pedal is, because I had a shim verb for a while, and I got rid of it very quickly because I thought it sounded dreadful.
Right.
Not dreadful. Dreadful's not fair. I thought it sounded a bit bad.
Okay.
Especially in comparison to, like, it was very much the... Because I think this is kind of based on... if you look at it aesthetically, it looks like a Boss reverb pedal. It looks like the RV... The RV,
they've gone for that colour scheme, and that is the sort of thing with Moore, isn't it? It's the colour scheme.
The colour scheme denotes what they've based it on, essentially. Yeah. And what they've done is they've based it on a pedal that I didn't think was very good in the first place, in the RV5. And I thought it was a real shame, and I always thought that this was like a glaring omission in a otherwise pretty decent catalogue that Moore had put together. And then they brought out the Skyverb,
yeah,
which is obviously based on the Strymon,
yeah,
Blue Sky. And that's brilliant. I really like that pedal. I think that's really good. And I think it's maybe a shame that they didn't do that one
as a pro
as
pedal,
the pro pedal. Because I guess they went with the Shimverb because it's the biggest selling of the two. But like, it's only the biggest selling of the two because it came out first. Yeah. It was part of the original run. And so, you know, people were buying them because they were cheap, because they came out before the Hall of Fame Mini.
Yes,
you know,
I before anything, they did. Anything. Oh, yeah, Moore definitely were the first people to introduce, like,
these
like
very, very
mini
small
reverb
pedals.
Yeah. And definitely small pedals in general.
So I'm glad that they've put the shimmer on there as a separate control, and I think that will set it apart. Not that I'm trying to trash what you've just purchased.
No.
But I think that, for me, the Skyverb was a much better pedal.
Well, I have to say, it's not, like, I'm not bowled over, but it does have some interesting features in the Pro. The most interesting features are the micro controls that they have just along the top. They have like a pre-delay control.
Yeah.
And then because they've got a wet-dry level as well.
Is the wet-dry level... The wet is just you can bleed in the wet. Is that right?
That's right. And the dry is your clean. But,
oh, wait. Okay, yeah, so you've got wet control and a dry control.
Which
is
actually great.
Yeah, that is very cool.
What I was quite enjoying doing when I was messing around with it is cutting off the dry completely, boosting all the pre-delay and maxing out the decay and putting the wet on full.
Mm.
And then the pre-delay just means that your notes really swell in.
Right, okay.
And you've got like a lot of weird... sort of noises going on anyway, just off of your natural
like
string
ambience and stuff.
And then with tons of decay, you get this, and just the wet signal only, you get this really sort of boosted, swelled sound, which is just great, like a really like never-ending ambient swollen sound. It's really cool. So there are some cool features on it. I have to say, I'm not. Oh, you've got it up. It goes up to 9 octaves up on the.
It does say
ridiculous.
12 on there. What's
it? Doesn't. Is it plus 12? Yeah.
I don't really know what that means. But
maybe. Can you even hear 12 octaves up?
Well, on a bass, probably. But I tell you what, you can hear on the bass is that the tracking ain't great.
Right.
Okay. But I don't think. In fairness,
well, I mean,
to the Shimverb,
if you've got the dry off and the wet full and the pre-delay up, of course the tracking's not going to be great.
It's true. It's true. But even you subtly, I found that I think the adding an octave to that sound, it just, I don't think it's the sort of thing for bass. On guitar, I understand how it works, because when you hear those that sort of thing done, it's normally with those sort of Strymon or Eventide pedals.
Yeah,
you have like notes being played and these weird sort of the swelling of notes that are really, really high up coming in afterwards, and that's sort of the thing that's made those pedals popular. And it's great, it's a really interesting sound. I just don't think it's anything that you can apply to bass especially. So, you know, I got this because I thought that was a cool extra feature. I'm actually finding that I'm not really using it. I'm okay. Just using the reverb, definitely really controllable. It's still a really convenient sized pedal. I actually think they're really well built, like really sturdy,
yeah,
little pedal for not much money sort of thing. So absolutely great. But on bass, I think on guitar, this is a really overlooked cheap way of getting some sounds that you get on Strymons and even Tides without having to pay the big bucks. I really think it's obviously not as good, but it has some really interesting sounds on there.
Still pretty small as well, considering it's a two-button foot switch.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, it's the size of... It's just over the size of two Moog pedals. It's like... two Moors and a bridge, basically.
Yeah, and you get way more control than you would on just the standard Chimb Herb.
Exactly. Yeah, you get tons of control for a pedal that size, which is great. Just maybe I could maybe just go for something, just a single pedal reverb for bass that maybe has a few more controls rather than this. But still, a really cool pedal. And because it was so affordable, whilst I'm probably not going to put this on my board, I'm certainly not going to sell it anytime
soon. Just have it kicking around for any guitar tracking or anything like that.
Exactly. That's what I thought. So just a really fun pedal, I think, to have for not a lot of money. I kind of think that about a lot of the Moog range, though. I've always been really pro them, but I just think, man, they cost nothing. Like, buy a few just to try some stuff. They are cool, especially like, because I have the Elec Lady as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm certainly not going to spend any money on a flanger.
No.
But it's actually something quite cool to have for just maybe that one time in the future that I need a flanger.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that Moog kind of have to be appreciated for what they have done to the guitar pedal market, in that they have caused companies like Ibanez and even Electro-Harmonix to a certain degree to be like, okay, cool.
And so, TC.
And TC, TC being the obvious one, of course, to be like, okay, actually, people are, you know, they've been the catalyst in the same way that, you know, 10 years ago, Orange bringing out the Tiny Terror was the catalyst for people to be like, oh, tell you what, small amps.
Lunchbox amps.
They're really, really cool. I quite want one of those, but I'm really into Hughes and Kettner, or I'm really into Engel, and they don't do one. That's really annoying. And then all of a sudden, those companies had to react. And I think that that's what Moog have done for the pedal market. You know, is Ibanez were like, okay, hang on a sec. If we don't release a smaller version of our Tube Screamer, people are just going to... We know the market's there because people are buying Moog Green Miles.
Yeah,
we need to quickly do this. And it's the same, you know, I think that is one of the reasons why we're seeing so many of the nano Electro-Harmonix pedals.
Yeah, definitely. They've realised that people don't want those massive pedals anymore. And actually, interestingly enough, on a flip, you're seeing companies like Rotosound, who still do all their original pedals in their original chassis.
They're huge.
When was the last time you saw a board with one on?
Well, of course. Yeah.
I mean, I recently got my hands on one of their choruses. Their, I can't remember. It's like, Crusader. That's right. I was thinking Nigel Farage, because it's got a big like Union Jack on it. But no, yeah, that's the Crusader. The Crusader chorus. But it sounds great. But it's massive.
Yeah.
And they've almost sort of missed the mark there. They've sort of gone, well, everyone's into reissues, but it's like to a certain point.
Yeah.
But they did that with that fuzz pedal. Do you remember they brought out the, I can't remember what it's called. Matty bought one, I think, maybe. It was, they brought out the original, maybe it was just called the Rotofuzz.
Well, maybe, I think some pedals are more likely to get away with it than others.
A chorus, a fuzz, maybe not.
Yeah. Exactly. A fuzz in an original chassis, people are going to, because I think drives and fuzzes have that whole Klon thing about them. Yeah. That whole, like, the legendary tone that you're after. And I think people are more likely to go for a massive pedal for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
This is the Rotosound fuzz pedal.
Yeah, and it's just a cast box.
There's no power supply input. You've got to run it off a battery.
It's like the size of a house brick.
They are massive, but they did sound... Well, they sounded dreadful, actually, but that was completely the point.
Yeah. Me and Luke Taft opened up the chorus to see how big the chip actually really was.
Right.
No bigger than a Boss chip.
Yeah, of course.
It's just all extra space.
Oh, of course.
But actually, I was sort of getting around to another point to say that they've missed the mark. I actually think Ibanez, more than any other company, have, and they're ever an astute company, Ibanez. They're always on the money with their new releases. We don't talk about them enough just because we're all into retro gear, but they're always on the money with their guitars. And their pedals, definitely completely the same thing. Like, the fact that they didn't just introduce the Cheap Screen Razor mini pedal, they revoiced it.
Yeah.
And loads of people are going, it sounds better.
Well, yeah. We might have a question about that coming up towards the end of the show.
Really? Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. And also, Matt pointed out something about the new delay pedal the other day. Not on the podcast. I think we were just talking about it. And
which new delay pedal?
The
new mini one.
Because they've got the AD9, essentially, in a mini thing. And they've introduced a new control on it, which is a blend on an analog delay.
Oh, right. Wow. Okay. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, yeah. Because Matt was using the term game changer in reference to it. And it'd be really interesting. We should definitely get hold of one, because I've got an AD9 and we should AB the AD9.
That sounds good.
With the DM2W.
Well, I was actually thinking
a Maxon analog delay.
Yeah, nice. And a DL4. We should do a delay standoff. Well, you know, we had that thing the other week where we were like, "Whose favorite?"
Stop saying standoff.
Where we were saying, you know, what's your favorite analog delay? We should actually put them to the test.
Definitely. Yeah.
I mean, because what would it be? It would be DL4, carbon copy, AD9,
RE20.
That's not analog.
Not analog, mate.
RE20.
And the DMW.
DM2W.
DMTW. Yeah.
Is the Ibanez Echo Shifter?
I don't think they're analog.
Yeah,
yeah, okay. But I don't think it doesn't have legendary status. It was just a bit cool.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll do that. We'll do a little pedal shootout. Yeah. What was your other thing that you've tried this week? Or was it the Rotosound Chorus?
No. The other thing was that one of our podcast listeners deposited an Ibanez.
This is ridiculous.
Sent me, or us, an Ibanez Ergodyne bass after we spoke about it the other week.
You should give the listener a shout out.
I should. I should definitely do that. I'm just trying to... It was Alex. I can't remember his surname.
Chapman, was it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think that's right. Let me double check.
This is great.
This is great.
Right?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Alex Chapman.
Should give me a heads up you were going to do that.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, Alex.
So, firstly, thanks to Alex Chapman, who is a loyal podcast listener. So loyal, in fact, that he's given us one of his bass guitars simply because we talked about how bizarre and cool those are.
So, I think we should try something with the Ergodyne.
Yes.
We should do something with it. I'm thinking some sort of modding adventure.
Yeah.
And we should make a video on it. I was thinking of a few things that we could mod. Now, of course, the thing about the Ergodyne basses was that they came at this really strange time in history where all guitar companies were obsessed with making everything modern. There was this real push towards... And you'd think people would have learned from the Fender Elites.
Well, yeah.
But no.
Which, by the way, a lot of people...
complained about, didn't they?
So a lot of people in all the comments.
I've got a Fender Elite.
I've got one of them.
This is in reference to the video we put up last week, the top five guitar fails, with number one being the old Fender Elites, not the new American Elites, which are essentially American Deluxe. But the old relaunch, mid-80s Fender, trying to kickstart the brand... and producing some guitars that are just horrible.
Yeah, they are horrible. It's really weird. Like, a lot of people being like, I've got one of those and they were great. And it's like, well, the fact is that the company nearly folded because they made those. Yeah. So whether you think that now or not.
Exactly. Yeah, you may have grown attached to it in the last 30 years, but it basically forced CBS to sell a company.
It nearly crippled the largest guitar company in the world. So there is no argument that they are anything other than rubbish.
Yeah.
But... But anyway, the point was sort of, you know, post that, there was this new thing where everyone was trying to super modernize and come up with like new ideas. And Ibanez, ever at the forefront of that, they just introduced things like their monorail bridges. In fact, the Ergodyne was the first model they ever released that featured the monorail bridges. If you don't know what a monorail bridge is, listeners, it, to be honest, I think it's still exclusive to bass guitars just because of the size of the strings.
No. I've seen it on some electrics, some six strings.
Oh, okay, cool. The idea with them is that you get an individual bridge piece for every string so that you get no residual buzz from any of your other strings when you're playing an individual string. It's supposed to allow for sort of recording clarity and things like that.
Surely better intonation as well.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
I'm thinking of guitars that don't use six saddle bridges anyway, but
yeah that sort of thing. So they were trying things like that, and they were really pushing active electronics and how that worked. So they were, Ibanez were the first company to introduce things like pickup blenders instead of individual like volume controls, yep, or three-way toggles. So being able to blend between like your neck and bridge on a single rotary, which would have a like a little click position in the middle that would have both pickups on, and you know, loads of other things like introducing sort of little mid scoop buttons and toggles and stuff like that. There was loads going on with that side of things. They also decided to try abandoning wood.
No one needs wood. It's not like it's been used for, you know, however many years. No point.
So Ibanez started making the Ergodyne series out of what is essentially putty.
Luthite,
which is a putty-like type of plastic that has a similar sort of consistency to graphite.
Okay. So they made a guitar out of Play-Doh and put some strings on it.
And they did them in some funky colours.
They did.
And lots of people bought them for about 700-800 quid a time. And now you couldn't sell one for 100 quid.
Well, as evidenced by Alex's attempts to sell this guitar and donating it to us so we can do some fun stuff with it.
So, I mean, because it's made out of putty, I don't know if we can do this, but I was thinking of one of those like dipped swirl finishes.
Ooh. Will we not need to strip the guitar first?
That's it. I'm not sure. I don't know if we can do it because of the material, but it's quite an interesting idea.
It is an interesting idea.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems, too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'd like to give it a go.
You've got some connections to sort of refinishing things, haven't
you? Yeah, exactly. And it was something that actually a couple of friends of us were talking about doing recently, so it might be a really fun thing to do.
I mean, this,
but I've got to find out if it's doable first.
Surely this, when all the mods are done, is your new bass. I mean, we've just talked around it for half an hour, whatever.
This is the best bit, I think, about the Ergodynes was that Ibanez decided, who puts logos on headstocks anymore?
And the headstock is the smallest headstock I've ever seen.
Yeah, it is true. But what they decided to do was, so where, if if you were going to put a logo not on a headstock, where would you put it, Mark?
I mean, you could put it on the back of the headstock if you're looking to be subtle, or maybe on the back plate of the guitar.
That's
so,
true,
you know, again, the person who's buying it will always see it, knows what brand it is, but, you know, you don't have to necessarily be flashy about the logo.
True.
I tell you what, I definitely wouldn't put it.
Where?
I mean, sort of anywhere on the body, really, because, you know, or maybe, you know, if there's a scratch plate, you could do something nice and neat, like on the scratch plate.
Yeah, so Epiphone,
if you
Gibson
want to remove it,
do that.
Yeah. So where is it?
It's not just on the front of the body, where some brands have done that before. We saw Status do that with the Washburn Status bases and things like that. And even they managed to do it tastefully. It was sort of like a long, the straight line of the neck.
That's another totally, I mean, it's not the ideal place, but you could put it along the neck where it joins the body. That's where they've put it on the eyebrows, right?
No. What they've done is put it in the middle of the body underneath the strings.
Sweet.
So straight on, so the same way, the same angle that it would be if it was on the headstock, only in the middle underneath the strings.
No, not the same. It's not the same angle if it was on the headstock. It's at an exact right angle to that,
is it?
How
is it on a right
so
angle?
It's which is fine. Well, it's not fine. It looks,
it means
it's
that when
ridiculous.
It's, when it's basically what would have happened is someone would have gone, guys, I'm just going to try something, okay? Friends,
I've got this guitar on a stand.
It's exactly what I was going to say. I'm going to try something. Just bear with me. And they set the decal up, and then they hung the guitar up, and they looked at it on the wall of Ibanez, and they went,
I always assumed that the guys that do the decal were playing like pin the tail on the donkey or something.
Yeah.
when they literally can't
put it on the headstock because it's too small. But yeah, so the thing about it being that way around is whenever you see someone playing one,
you can't read
what it says because it's at a right angle to the way that you would read it.
It's so
and
good.
Also their arm is probably in the way.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's one of the craziest things Ibanez have ever done, hence the reason that the bottom completely fell out of any resale value on them. But
they made a lot of guitars out of that material as well. So
they did,
a couple of different bases.
It was popular for a few years.
Yeah.
And then, like, they literally, as the sort of guitar audience sort of woke up again, like, they dropped it like a hot potato. It was there 1 minute, gone the next.
So we should say again, thanks to Alex for giving us this guitar. We are going to do something cool with it because, it is quite a weird thing, and it would be easy for us to just be like, oh, these are not to our taste. But actually, let's see if we can make something cool out of it.
Yeah, I think so. I think they sound great. They've got great active electronics, thanks to Ibanez always being brilliant.
We could maybe put
sort of
some
thing.
Different pickups in
no,
there.
No, we can't, because this was the other brilliant thing. They released the Ergodyne in 4-string, 5-string, and 6-string version. But they were like, how can we make this more affordable? And they were like, I know, we can just have one pickup that's going to fit all of the models. So this is a 4-string that we've got. It has the 6-string spaced pickup in
Sweet.
It. So the width of the pickup is a good inch and a half wide of the of the strings in either direction.
Cool.
So
so there's nothing, unless we buy a different 6-string pickup.
Maybe if there is a soap bar 6-string pickup that's a stock size.
Yeah, Seymour Duncan make one, but whether it'll fit or not is a completely different thing. So so there we go. One last thing before we dive into news is we've got an episode idea, and this came from the Facebook group from a friend of ours called Joe.
Not a friend of ours.
yeah, we're just a colleague. He's kind of given us an idea for a future episode, which is a Would You Rather episode. So what he's proposing is that people send in ideas via the Facebook group of Would You Rather situations, and we all answer them. So his example is, would you ever play a guitar with single coils or only ever play with humbuckers? So would you only ever play guitar with singles or only ever play with humbuckers? What would you rather do?
That's interesting.
Or would you rather never buy another guitar again and stick with what you got, or lose the guitars that you've got and you can buy an infinite number of guitars under £300?
Interesting.
So how long do we have to flesh out those questions for?
Well, I mean, we don't have to do those right now. What I'm saying is, people on the Facebook group can send in their ideas for Would You Rather questions.
Okay.
And we'll try and build a whole episode around some Would You Rathers.
Yeah, that sounds great.
I think it's going to be cool. So yeah, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Do submit those there. Should we do some news?
Newly shaved wrists.
Blimey, that's so dark. So dark. Anyway, first up, Magnetic Effects have announced the Satellite, a natural overdrive and boost pedal. We've got one already. I know, it's out over there. To have a play with.
What is it?
It's an OD/boost.
All right, I'm going
to
get it.
You might not be able to find it over there. It's in the sort of pile of stuff.
There's so much stuff over here.
There is. So the Satellite is, as it says on the tin, it's a real natural sounding, kind of semi-transparent overdrive and boost pedal. I've had about 5 or 10 minutes to have a play on it. It sounds really, really nice. It's definitely entering into a crowded market. Obviously, there's a lot of things that do a similar job, but
I like that it's got gold knobs.
It's got gold knobs. It's got a nice picture of a kind of like retro satellite on the front. Yeah, as with the White Atom fuzz that was in our gear of the year last year. It's built really well, hand built in the UK. I'm liking it.
The chassis that they use are the same chassis that Gojira use for their effects, but these are 100% better, like in their
In terms of like design and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. The knobs that they use are better. I really like top mounted
jacks, top mounted power on there as well.
Yeah, well, that's pretty standard. It looks great.
I would really like to do a bit of comparison with that and the Soul Food.
Really? Is it that sort of thing?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, so...
Well, we've got volume gain high and low, so a two-band...
Indeed.
I'm into it.
Indeed. And so from my kind of 5-10 minutes I had with it goes from, much like the White Atom, it's got a real kind of extended kind of range on it. It'll do like super clean right through to almost like a drive.
Right.
It's nice.
It's nice.
Excuse me. So yeah, again, hand built in the UK. I'm really into the magnetic stuff. I think it's they're just doing great stuff.
They are, yeah. I like sort of. I'm into little UK boutique companies as well. There's something quite nice about having something handmade in London, England.
Indeed, in that London.
And this is the Crikey. Yeah, I think of them as being a smaller company than this, but this is serial number. Whether they serial by pedal.
Don't read the serial number out. That's a very bad idea.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that serial number is actually the date.
Oh, is it?
Which suggests to me that they're only making one pedal a day, which is kind of cool.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I'm liking it a lot. Joe, tell us about the PV Headliner 1000 bass amp.
Okay, so PV have released a brand new 1,000-watt bass head.
That's what you need, right?
Well, you know, 1,000 watts, I think, is becoming slightly more popular, actually. We're seeing an awful lot, like, definitely this year and towards the end of last year, loads of companies bringing out, like, 800-watt versions. We saw... like at NAMM, Hartkey announced a an 800-watt.
Didn't they already have a really high pad head? What was
they
kilo?
Have 1,000? Yeah, the kilo's 1,000 as well. They also have the LH 1000. Oh, to be honest, Hartkey were a bad example because they've always been.
They're always 1,000 watts.
Yeah, they love it because they
Hartkey have released this new 1,000-watt bass head. Yeah, they're all 1,000 watts. Yeah.
They do some 500s as well. But yeah, they did that. Mark Bass released their little lime green ninja, which was either 800 or 1,000 watts.
Okay.
Ashdown have released an 800 watt version of their Rootmaster. They also had the earlier in the year they released the Retro Glide, which was 800 watts.
What's the Retro Glide?
It is just like a million band EQ,
right? So retro as in the 80s.
Yeah, as in it's like a 20 band EQ.
Right,
it just has loads of EQs, and then you just input output.
Are they just sliders?
Yeah, just sliders. Okay. But it's quite cool. It's cool. Okay. But anyway, that was sort of 800 watts. Yeah, you had TC Electronics upgraded their BC series of or BH series of heads to include an 800 watt version. Like everyone's getting on this sort of 800 watt.
Orange released their
Obi-Wan 500.
No, they only went up. to 500. Yeah,
yeah, but the K was supposed to
happen. Oh yeah, the K was supposed to happen. But loads of people, I think people are looking for sort of more headroom, and 1,000 watt seems to be becoming more common. I mean, the only reason that I've always steered away from it is because kind of until recently, I think I've done a lot of cab sharing.
Yeah.
And you just can't guarantee that a cab... The problem with bass stuff is so many bass players buy cheap cabs.
Yeah.
And a cheap bass cab will only handle 400 watts. And admittedly, you know, this, it only really matters if you're turning it up. But still, I'd hate to turn up, someone have like, you know, some sort of Harkey backliner, like... You know, 300 watt support in 410.
And then you're, yeah, turning, dropping 1,000 watts through it.
Exactly. Yeah, just it's too much of a risk. So you know, that's why I think I've steered away from it a fair bit. But they're becoming more and more popular, the 1,000 watt thing. But anyway, back onto the PV.
So what's special about the PV?
Well, actually, virtually nothing. it's in exactly the same chassis that they had all their Tour Series stuff in.
Yeah.
Previously, they
2U.
That's right, yeah. Yep. Just a 2U, a 2U rack spaced head, which is designed to go into a rack, so not really designed to be on its Todd. It's exactly the same sort of chrome chassis as that, which features a 7-band EQ. The thing that actually is a little bit unique is they have added some controls. They've obviously been looking at the market. More specifically, they have been looking at Ashdown, and they have introduced some of the same controls that Ashdown are known for on their ABM series. So they've introduced an optical compressor, which I don't know why so many bass companies put compressors on their head.
Well, I guess because it's like, it's the go-to effect for bass, isn't it?
Yeah, but no one wants that little control out of a compressor. Like, it doesn't work.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, but it's for something, it's a easy feature to include, yeah. And for someone who doesn't 100% know what they're looking at, it's, you can go, this one's got a compressor.
Yeah, it's just a shame to put a control on a head, which immediately makes it not a professional piece of equipment.
Sure.
I've just never understood optical compressors on heads for that reason. But anyway, they've put that on. They've put a little grit control, so something that simulates the valve drive feature on an Ashdown,
yep,
ABM. And there's something else. Oh, it's like they've put like a tone shaping, a bright boost. That's it. There's a bright boost on, okay, there as well, which is something that actually Harkey have had on their LH series for a long time, a little bright switch. But then I guess Harkey took that from Ampeg.
Yes.
So it's just, yeah, it's kind of PV catching up. Like, it's not really breaking any boundaries. It's cool that they've got something else on the market for bass players, but it's a bit late to the punch, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone else has had this stuff for quite some time, and if I was looking for those features, I think I'd sooner trust the build quality of an Ashdown or a Harkey over a PV.
Yeah, it's a very, very crowded market, I guess. But we'll see how the headliner performs, I guess. Might, yeah, be doing something tonally that we're...
Yeah, exactly. It could well be. And I love PV. Like, I was really fighting for that PV Classic 20,
yeah,
in the things. I just don't know why. Just PV, just make something interesting for bass. Stop making it so like, oh, here's something that's sort of competing with the market.
Very usable.
Yeah, like...
Very usable.
They put so much effort into that Classic 20, and there's just like... You can tell that whoever they've got in A&R isn't a bass player.
I think the reason is that they're taking like a lot of their PA technology and just basically making a bass amp out of it.
Yeah.
That's how it kind of strikes me. And that doesn't lead to particularly interesting designs. So, Jay Cross.
Hello.
What can you tell me about the new Radial Engineering Shotgun?
So, Radial are one of those companies who just don't really get enough attention, I think, generally. They make really, really cool stuff that a lot of people use and nobody really sort of shouts about. It's kind of like how we would treat Tech 21 if they didn't do the Sans amp. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, oh yeah, I've got a couple of Tech 21 pedals. I've had one of them. Yeah. You know, it's a shame because they do, yeah, some really, really, yeah, good stuff, but a lot of the stuff they do is all like switches and stuff like that. And
it's all stuff that people who are guitar techs,
yeah,
and tour managers and sound engineers love, but for a guitarist,
yeah,
it's quite a boring thing
to
buy.
They do the best DIs. And,
yeah,
well, totally. Yeah, and that sort of leads on kind of to what this is, which is the so the Shotgun is a 4-channel amp driver, which,
right,
basically what it allows you to do is it allows you to simultaneously split your signal.
Right.
Great sentence.
Split your signal.
Simultaneously split your signal into four different outputs.
What possible situation?
Well, so, yeah, I mean, yes. Now, the reason that I'm a little bit hesitant on this is it isn't switchable, which is a bit annoying. It's not switchable on the fly, at least.
So what, this is for people with 4-amp setups?
Well,
who want to drive all 4 amps?
Yes, or it's designed for using in the studio. So if you want to go into 4 amps at once, or you could, for example, run, you could be running 2 amps, and you could also be running a running straight into the front of house.
But it drives it as well.
It's no, it doesn't mean a driver in like an overdrive pedal.
By drive, it means it's built in. Radio have got some technology, the CLC or something. Yeah, CLC they call it, the consistent load compensation, which basically allows you to run multiple. The reason that stuff like the Morley ABY or cheap ABY pedals are really loud and horrible is because there's not a load going to.
Yeah. And there's also generally they're not powered, they're passive. So if you're doing an ABY, you're effectively splitting the signal.
Yes.
The signal that's going in is being split.
Split in half.
What this is doing is putting the signal in and then essentially, yeah, like Jay said, it's like compensating. It's like almost like an amp for that signal. In fact, don't they even call it that? They call it an amp driver. Okay, so so basically, yeah, it's making up the difference. Basically, it's not taking the signal in and then dividing it by four. It's taking the signal in, dividing it by four, and then making up that difference.
I see.
Again.
Yeah, so. And that's one application for it. The other application is you can actually you can split the four channels so that they become two channels, but they become two stereo channels.
Right.
So the stereo in, the thing that's quite cool about this is you can go stereo into it, and then you can go dual stereo out. So one of the little diagrams they've got on their site is a Les Paul going into an MXR stereo chorus, which is one of the best chorus pedals out on the market, the big yellow one.
Right.
It's 18 volt. So it's like loads of headroom, super clean, super crisp. And what they've got is they've got it coming stereo out of the super chorus into the shotgun and then out to four twins.
Yes.
I bet that would sound absolutely unbelievable. Can you imagine that super...
The Cure,
I mean, that's surely who they've got in mind for something like this. Imagine, like, just standing on a huge stage, having two twins at either side of the stage, just, like playing something, like, a little bit intricate, and it just... Or even just, like, playing, like, a massive chord, and it just go, like... Whoosh, I bet it'd be amazing.
That would sound good.
Yes.
So basically, it's another kind of very professional setup.
As everything with radio, like it's one of those things where you're like, "This is cool." It's not that exciting. It's cool though.
Having said that, there are podcast listeners who have definitely got 4 amps.
If they
want to plug them all in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can leave a channel idle as well.
Yeah, yes, of course you could. Yeah. Yeah.
And you can switch between whether that you've got the ground lift on or off, and you know, there's all sorts of stuff you can do with it. But standard 9 volt in, which is cool. I don't know why there's not
a sort of on off for each channel. That's surely
presumably because that is like you're moving into like serious technology once you go to that, like, yeah, you know, there's a reason that like the Layla,
it would be
3-at-1s were £400,
right?
You know what I mean? Like,
I just had a thought.
Okay,
in the news,
yeah,
because we haven't spoken about it before, can we talk about the ZVEX pedal that I shared on the
Because we've not talked about it, I guess. So it's not technically news because it came out of NAMM.
Yeah, but we didn't ever talk about it.
Why didn't we? I don't know. Must have just not gone on the radar.
Oh, so, that's a shame.
Okay, so you posted something up in the Facebook group about a ZVEX pedal that blew your mind, as you put it.
It actually did.
Okay.
So...
what's it called?
Oh, God. Something Candela?
It is the something Candela.
I can't remember. Yeah.
Okay, go on. Let's describe it. So it's the if you search ZFX Candela, you'll find it from there.
It's something like phasing Candela, something like that. Anyway, so it's the world's first candle-powered effects pedal.
We did talk about this already. Did we? We did actually talk about this.
I don't remember at all.
Okay, so for those who missed it, just to give us a quick overview of the Candela.
So this pedal looks like... It looks like something for a steampunk band. It looks like some sort of steampunk lantern. And it allows you to phase and vibrato and chorus your signal in different ways by moving different things on this contraption. So those things can be anything from the power supply, because it has solar powered panels that the candle operates into.
So wait, is it an actual candle?
Yeah, you put a tea light in it. Yeah. So you need to watch it. It's unbelievable.
You put a tea light in
it. Yeah, it's brass. It's this brass contraption that looks a bit like a weird steampunk clock tower. It's a large contraption that you plug to. You can adjust settings.
Really dislike that you're using the word contraption while talking about an effects pedal.
It's amazing. It's $6,000.
He's only made one, right?
But he'll make to order.
Okay.
It's great because the actual Vex guy does the...
Zachary Vex
does the demos with a guy whose surname is Sex, playing the...
Sex and Vex, of course.
Playing the guitar. but he has... you can do things like you can move the power supply.
Is it Zachary Vex and Vacary Sex?
it may have been.
Okay, good.
But you can do things like move the power supply around, and that will adjust it. It has a wheel that circulates, and that wheel passing in front of the light is what creates the tremolo or vibrato sound. So he encourages you to paint that wheel if you want to get a different sort of tone, or add cut little holes in it, or add little rivets to it to change the way that it will make your effect sound. There's a little magnet.
How do they work?
On there that you can that you can push this magnetic ball towards the brass that he was explaining. Whilst the brass isn't attracted to the magnet, it still electrically charges it, which speeds up the rate at which you physically have to place your hand on this magnet and move it up. It's on a little hinge, and it is honestly, check out the video on the Facebook group, listeners, if you haven't seen. I appreciate we're a bit late to the punch with this, and I'm really disappointed that I didn't realize that it was
We talked about it maybe when you weren't here or something.
Maybe I saw that 60 Cycle Hum got their hands on it. They got to check it
got
out
to try one. Okay.
When they were at NAMM. But I've never been so impressed with something. It sounds incredible.
I mean, it sounds like something out of Aztec Zone or Crystal Maze.
yeah, it's exact. But the quality of the modulation effects was amazing. It just sounds like £6,000 worth of, or $6,000 worth of modulation. I was really, really into it. Love the idea. Love how creative it is. Love how Zachary Vex talks about the whole thing and how in depth he's gone, and how he's basically tried to look for the ways that you create those effects and tried to go about it in the most elaborate way possible. And you can tell when he's narrating it, he's just so proud of what he's managed to create. It is awesome. It's awesome.
I am very interested to see if anyone actually buys one outside of the one that he's made. Because it sounds like an art project, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it is very much so, like this beautiful like brass contraption.
It sounds like really is a marketing tool, because you're going to see that in like things that aren't just guitar magazines or talked about in guitar podcasts. That's going to come up on like BuzzFeed or whatever, or front page of Reddit and things like that. And then you're going to look further into who is this mad professor making this stuff, and then find like the wah probes and things like that.
True. And it has to be said, like, if you ever thought Earthquaker devices were pushing boundaries or cat and bread or anything like that, ZVEX have just shot all of those companies down.
Well, and also they've been doing it for years. Like the Fuzz Probe I remember one of the first kind of boutique pedals I ever saw.
Yeah, and they do some great crazy stuff, but they've kind of sort of lost some of their individuality when you know, companies like Earthquaker, companies like Catlin Bread have sort of turned up and been able to offer, you know, similarly weird things and maybe slightly more creative in some cases.
Well, and also the Z-Vex stuff has kind of got less creative because he's been doing the Vexter stuff, so, yeah. You know, the one where there's some Chinese manufacturing involved, and, you know, the non-hand-painted stuff. It's kind of become a real pedal company that's just kind of there. You know, it's ticking over in the same way that Earthquaker are or Wampler or those sort of companies. And then you hear about him doing this and it's like, oh yeah, you are mad. You are really mad. I want to get him on the podcast. I think that'd be cool. We talk about this.
Let's definitely do that.
The Candela. I'm up for it. So in a week where there's been no news, and I specifically put a post on the Facebook group saying there's no news, we need your questions because there's nothing to fill the podcast. We're at the end of the podcast and we don't have any time for any questions. Oh, how has that happened? Matt's not even here.
Should we at least do the question that we said we were going to do about the Ibanez thing? Let's quickly...
Which Ibanez thing?
About the mini pedal, about the Tube Screamer.
Because earlier on you said, oh, there may be a question about that, and we didn't get around to talking about it.
No, I'll tell you what. Let's make them wait. Okay. Let's do it next week.
Okay.
I can come back, same time, same bat channel, same...
Same what? Bat channel.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Yeah.
Same... Just idiots.
Okay.
Every week. What we will do is we're going to do some questions over on the Patreon episode that I think are very Patreon-specific questions. We're going to talk about... So Gary's asked, what are the top 10 weirdest pedals ever produced? We're going to talk about that.
Oh, wow.
Mike says, I'd like to know if you could buy a guitar you love. I love the sound of, but hate the look of. And Evan is asking questions
have
about...
Have we ever kissed?
Fuzz pedals. That is... not answerable in a single podcast, I don't think. There's some very, very deep backstory to that we'd need to go into.
Backwash story.
Indeed. Blimey. If you want to join us for the Patreon episode, you can do so by going over to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $5 a month, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds every week. Plus, you get your... From $10 a month, you get your name read out as one of our executive producers, and you get a whole host of other bonuses that are yet to be decided that we're going to do this year at some point. Some people have decided that they want to do that and become our executive producers and that. And their names are these.
Hondi McConzi, Jai Daibtai, Arak Sori, Pal Cregan, Jock Gidfrey, Dal Raskan, Jock Kinneru, Wal Klabawab, Chris Walnob, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quellanan, Fletch Fluchare, Phil Tamaset. Oh, there are too many now.
I also don't
Lowry and Dawson's Creek theme. Mog Gravett, Colin Underwoop.
That was, I think, next week. You should probably read them properly because that's 2 weeks in a row where you have hideously distorted people's names.
It's so good, though.
And I feel that
I'll read your names properly next week.
Good. If you want to join us next week, as always, you can find the podcast on iTunes. It would be cool if people started leaving us some reviews on iTunes because I've noticed we've... Not for that bit, obviously. But we had some initially when we launched the podcast and we've not had any more since then.
Yeah, I keep having to log in and leave fake ones.
I know. I've noticed the names are getting stupider and stupider that leave us reviews. So...
thanks very much, Colin Underwob.
Yes, yeah. Do go to iTunes, leave us a nice review. That would be much appreciated. You can also check out the website, guitarnerds.net, where we'll have loads of news. We've got new videos going up all the time. Joe Branton is doing some articles and stuff, doing some things for us.
Oh, there are some cool new ones coming out this week. I'm sorry, there has actually been a delay. Mark did actually ask me to finish them. But there are two new ones that will be out actually probably by the time this podcast comes out. I'm afraid one of them is bass player specific. I've done top 5 drive pedals for bass. I can't remember what the other one is. Oh, you have to wait and see.
Okay, nice.
They sound great.
They'll be going up on the site. As always, you can follow us or join the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum.
I remember what it is.
Go on.
It's
top five Facebook groups about guitars.
No, it's two for one, and it's an article about all those effect pedals that have put two pedals into one.
Oh, cool.
So things like that double hotcake and the soul.
That one,
the soul food, soul pog, yeah,
pog
and,
soul,
and the turnip and greens,
turnips
and all that.
greens,
all that stuff.
You can follow us on Twitter at Guitar Nerds. You can follow us on Instagram at Guitar Nerds. Follow us on Periscope at Guitar Nerds. You can catch us on YouTube, Guitar Nerds videos. You can follow us individually. I'm at @mark_random. Jay is at @jaybn1, and Joe is at @joseph_900. Bit of a weird episode this week, but thanks for sticking with us. We appreciate it.
I thought it was consistent.
Yeah, it was pretty good. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.